O'clock, and let's call the order of the November 9th, 2020 Oro Valley Water Utility Commission meeting. And we'll start by having roll call.
Commissioner Hollingsworth. Commissioner Hurt.
Here.
Commissioner Merrick.
Here.
Commissioner Mielke.
Here.
Vice Chair Reynolds. Vice Chair Reynolds.
Here.
Chair McMillan.
Here.
Commissioner Tuskeson. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Daniel. Okay, so finished roll call. We'll open our meeting up to call to audience. Do we have anybody from the member of the public?
No.
Okay. So we'll close our call to audience and we'll move to our first regular agenda item, which is a review and approval of the October 12th, 2020 regular session meeting minutes. Does anybody have any comments or questions on the minutes? Okay. Do I have a motion on the minutes?
I'll move approval.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Who is that? Okay, we have a motion from Commissioner Hurt and a second from Commissioner Mielke. Let's do a roll call for a vote on that.
Commissioner Hurt?
Yes.
Commissioner Merritt?
Yes.
Commissioner Mielke?
Yes.
Vice Chair Reynolds?
Yes.
Chair McMillan.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Okay, it's come to my attention recently that Commissioner Tuskeson is no longer going to be able to join us for the remainder of the meetings this year, or either the regular commission or the subcommittee, finance subcommittee. So given that we're right in the middle of our rates analysis and all that, we really need to make a decision, hopefully tonight, on putting in a temporary replacement for him so that the subcommittee will have a quorum when they meet and they can actually vote on things. And Commissioner Tuskeson was the chair of the finance subcommittee, I understand. So if we can get a temporary appointment of someone tonight to be on the finance subcommittee, that person will also act as the temporary chair in the next finance subcommittee meeting. And then, as I understand it, as we normally do in January, we'll, in our January meeting, we'll have another agenda item for resetting our subcommittee memberships and resetting our commission chair position and vice chair. So with all that being said, what we're looking for tonight is to see if there's any interest among the commissioners to temporarily filling Commissioner Tuskeson's position on the finance subcommittee and also acting as temporary chair of that subcommittee.
I will volunteer to fill in.
Okay. Commissioner Merrick has volunteered. Do we have any other interests? Okay, thank you for that volunteering. So I assume we need to vote on this. So let's do a roll call on the motion to appoint Commissioner Merrick as the temporary finance subcommittee member and as the temporary chair of that subcommittee.
You're muted, Daniel.
You're muted, Daniel. We can't hear you.
Do we have a second on the motion?
Second. You have a second?
I'll second.
A motion and a second.
Okay. So, Commissioner Hurt?
Yes.
Commissioner Merrick?
Yes.
Commissioner Mielke?
Yes.
Vice Chair Reynolds?
Yes.
Chair McMillan?
Yes.
Thank you.
Chair McMillan?
Yes.
And I think just for the rest of the group, and happy to have you on board, Commissioner Merrick, could you just briefly refresh the commission's mind as to some of your work experience? I think you'd be a great fit for the Finance Subcommittee. Could you just refresh our memory on some of your work experience?
Sure. As a employee of Detroit Edison, the 14,000 megawatt utility that provide power to Detroit as well as natural gas, I was in charge of what they called major enterprise projects. And I submitted probably no less than three rate cases based on schedule maintenance and other budgetary supplement requirements to the Michigan Public Utilities Commission. And I do have an MBA in finance, so these two things might come in handy to work with the Finance Committee. I'm sure there's probably some different things I'll have to pick up here, but there's some fundamentals I'm hoping that might kind of line up.
Thank you.
No problem.
Sounds like a good fit to me.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just yes. For the record, could you please tell me who made the motion and who seconded?
I believe I made the motion, mm-hmm. And I believe Ms. Commissioner Hirsch made the second.
Thank you.
Sorry if that wasn't clear. Okay. Thank you very much for volunteering for that important subcommittee. Okay, with that being done, it looks like we're moving to our third agenda item, which is update and discussion on water rates analysis. I think Mary and Peter are going to speak to us about that.
And before Mary gets started, I just want to let the commission know, we're proceeding a little differently on how we, what information we present to the commission. We're going to dive a little deeper than we have in the past. And the goal here is, when we finally get to where we're talking about a recommendation on rates, that the commission has a little more background, maybe a little more meat than they've had in the past to make that decision. So you can think of this as kind of maybe like a subcommittee light presentation, but it's, or the Cliff Notes version, but it's similar to the information that the subcommittee gets to hear. So just want to let the commission know compared to what you might have seen in the past, we're going to dive a little deeper in some of the specifics, but not so deep that we get into the subcommittee's work, or at least we'll be trailing their work, kind of reporting on where we are to date. So thank you. Take it away, Mary.
Okay. Thank you. This is an update on the water rates analysis on the work we've done completed on the baseline pro forma. Okay, next slide, please. So the purpose of the water rates analysis is in accordance with the mayor and town council water policies. We do an annual review of the revenue requirements and water rates is performed to ensure that the long-term financial health of the water utility. The functions of the Oro Valley Water Utility Commission includes reviewing and developing recommendations for water revenue requirements, water rates, and fee structures. And the commission evaluates staff recommendations based on a rates analysis to ensure the recommendations meet town policies and bond covenants. Next slide. This is just an outline of what we're going to go over. We're going to go over the revenues and expenses, the operating fund, the beginning cash balance, revenue and expense projections, the impact fee fund, the beginning cash balance, and revenue and expenses, the baseline pro forma, and the baseline analysis for the operating fund and the GPF fund. Next slide. The water utility revenues consist of potable and reclaimed water sales, groundwater preservation fees, miscellaneous service fees and charges, water development impact fees, and interest income. And the utility has two funds. The operating fund is the primary fund of the utility. The sources of revenue are water sales, service-related charges, and groundwater preservation fees. Expenses are for administration, operations, existing system improvements, and debt service. The impact fee fund, which is the water resource and system development impact fee fund, is accounts for the impact fees at the time a new meter, water meter is purchased. The impact fee is intended to fund costs for water resources, infrastructure to deliver those resources, and related debt included CAP capital infrastructure repayment related to new development. The expenses include personnel, operation and maintenance, capital costs, and debt service. Next slide. On the operating fund, we start with the beginning cash balance, which is the actual cash balance on the balance sheet on June 30th, 2020. And then we add the budget revenues for the fiscal year 2021 budgeted revenues. And we subtract the budgeted expenses and the known unbudgeted expenses. The growth projections, we get those projections from our new development permitting manager, and they're updated with information from the town's finance department, which is consistent with the town's financial forecasting. On the water sales and water use consumption trends, we the average monthly water consumption for a residential customer with a 5/8 inch water meter in 2019-20 was 7,200 gallons per month. So for this analysis, we're using, we're assuming 7,000 gallons per month. And then we're using the projected reclaimed deliveries from the 1920 information. On service-related revenues, include the billing fees that we receive for billing for Pima County and the town stormwater department. And the other fees include late fees, reconnect fees, new service establishment fees, backflow fees, engineering plan review fees, and construction inspection fees. The groundwater preservation fee is based on the 1920 water consumption, and the interest income is projected at 1.5 over the 5 years. Next slide. For personnel, we're projecting that no new employees for the 5-year projection period. The inflation rate is 2% annually. And we start with the 2021 budget and add 2% to that. Operations and maintenance include the repair maintenance of the water system, some costs from the NWRRDS project, wheeling expenses, recharge expenses, reclaimed expenses, and miscellaneous other expenses in the O&M. And then on our capital improvement program, we're including the existing system improvements and the NWRRDS project and our debt service. Next slide. On the impact fee fund, we begin with the beginning the actual cash balance at 6/30/2020, and then we add the revenues, the budgeted revenues for 2020-21, and then we subtract the budgeted revenues the expenses for 2020-21. The growth projections are the same as what we use for operating. The impact fee starting on July 1st, 2020, will be $6,387 per service unit. Interest income is the same as operating 1.5% annually. Next slide. On under O&M, we have the CAP capital costs for 3,000 acre feet. The capital improvement program for the NWRRDS project is funded in the impact fees at 60%, and then 40% is paid with GPF. Debt service, there is a portion of debt service for the 2003 refunding that was issued in 2012. Next slide. Oh, and next slide, Peter's gonna go over the numbers on their pro forma.
Thank you, Mary. So so here we're looking, we're comparing what was budgeted for the current fiscal year we're in and comparing it to the five-year pro forma. And here we're looking at revenues. You know, the revenues, they're based on all the items that Mary had discussed. The water utility is in alignment with the town's assumption. For example, you know, interest, what the interest rates will be, what personnel costs will be. So we're in alignment with the other town departments. And when we put that all together, this is what we come up with for our operating revenue. Next slide, please. So now we're going to look at the expenses here. And, you know, I've detailed some areas that really, you know, highlight, you know, what why we would need a rate and or fee increase. So we'll just kind of go through the numbers here. You know, here again, personnel, no new additional employees, just following alignment with the town's projections for personnel costs. O&M, you know, you'll notice a little drop in O&M from the 2.4 million to basically 2.2 million. And the reason for that drop is this fiscal year, we're doing some studies that were not, you know, they're 1 year items, you know, an aquifer study, a study related to conservation, those sorts of things. So that's why you see the drop in O&M from that 2.4 to 2.2 is we had some studies we wanted to perform this fiscal year that we don't have to perform next. Power for pumping, you know, that's, we just look at historical trends and, you know, we just follow that. The NWRRDS operating costs, you know, that's not slated to come online until 2024. So that's why there's no operating cost in this fiscal year, the next two. And then you'll notice on the operating cost for NWRRDS is it ramps up. And the reason being is, you know, it's a conservative approach to, we're going to be bringing in water that, you know, could have different aesthetic qualities, maybe a little different hardness, different TDA, TDS. And we're just going to introduce that to our system slowly and monitor it. So that's why you see the operating costs ramping up. It's not that it's getting more expensive. It's just that we're bringing in more water in those subsequent years. CAP wheeling costs, you'll notice that because in the future years, as we're bringing in more NWRRDS water, we're going to be backing off of some of our CAP wheeling. And one of the reasons for that is we expect the NWRRDS system to be notably less expensive than wheeling through Tucson Water System. So we're going to be not just offsetting the water of wheeling with NWRRDS water, but we're also going to be bringing in additional NWRRDS water. But I'm just trying to explain to you why you see the wheeling costs going down. It isn't getting less expensive. It's just we're wheeling less water. And these are all projections. So here's I'm going to be identifying three items that are really driving the need for a rate increase. If you look at our CAP recharge costs, CAP is projecting a tier one shortage in fiscal year 2020 or 22-23, and that's where you see this big jump from 1.8 million to just under 2.2 million. What happens is, as if we enter into a tier one shortage, we start losing the lower priority CAP customers. But we, you know, CAP still has the same fixed costs. They're delivering less water, and they're projecting an increased cost to the higher priority customers like municipalities. So they're projecting, these are the projections provided by CAP. They consider them advisory numbers, but this is the trajectory that we're aiming towards with respect to what we expect to pay on recharge costs. And then looking down at the CAP capital charges, we're going from the $365,000 to $504,000. You know, there's a jump there. And what the capital charges are is that's the debt service that CAP pays to the Bureau of Reclamation. Bureau of Reclamation built the CAP canal for $3 billion, and Arizona's been paying that debt back through the mechanism of the CAP to the Bureau of Reclamation. So as you have less customers paying the same debt service, the debt service per customer goes up. Looking at the reclaimed operating expenses in purple, if you look at the operations and maintenance, we have a big jump from fiscal year 2021 to this fiscal year, that $750,000 to $880,000. This is a result. This is a one-time adjustment that we're expecting to see from Tucson Water. Tucson Water did this year something similar to what we did last year, is really looking at what is the cost of service to provide reclaimed water, and were they being equitable to the potable water customer, so on and so forth. The result of that study indicated that they needed to charge more for reclaimed water. Now, this isn't just for Oro Valley. This is for all of their reclaimed customers. But it's a one-time adjustment, and you see that you know, big jump, $130,000 jump, and then it levels off. You know, it's small increases in the subsequent years. So those are three big operating drivers for us of increased costs. Next slide, please. So sorry, this is so small. There's a lot of information here, but I think we need to see it. So what we're doing here, looking at baseline, what baseline means is, if you look at what's highlighted in yellow, it indicates there's no, we're just saying what does our pro forma look like if we have no rate increases in potable water or rate increases in reclaimed water. So we look at our revenues, we look at our expenses, you know, we make all these projections to the best of our ability. And then we look down at the bottom here. Let's start look at our operating fund. So what this is here we're going to compare the line above it, what's the cash reserve required by town code, versus what is our projected cash. So like, for example, in the fiscal year we're in, the required cash is just under $3 million, and our operating fund is just under $8 million. So that's great. Looking at next fiscal year, again, just under $3 million required. Our operating fund, our cash reserve, is very healthy. It is just under $6.3 million. Well, what happens is when we get to fiscal year 23-24, we start seeing these big operational cost expenditures. Now, in 23-24, we dip below our required cash. Our required cash is just over $3 million. And Christian, if you can go one column to your right, we're projecting to be at 2.76, so about $250,000 below our cash reserve requirement. And then, as without any kind of adjustment to a significant adjustment to our projected revenues, it just gets aggravated in subsequent years till we end up in a negative cash balance. Now, looking at the GPF here, the groundwater preservation fee, this has really nothing to do with the operational costs. And what we're seeing here is our GPF cash reserve currently is a little over $2 million. In 21-22, we're projecting to be just under $2 million. And then you see a big jump in 22-23, we're in a negative. And the reason for that is we're starting construction on the NWRRDS, which I'll be updating in the next providing a commission update in the next presentation. But we're starting to spend some real money now. And what that just shows is we're depleting our GPF account. Next slide, please. So here, just looking closely at items we previously discussed, looking at our cash reserves here. So here again, in 23-24, we're projected to drop below our cash reserve requirement by about $250,000. So, you know, our operating fund is less than the cash reserve required in 23-24. This is due to increases in the CAP recharge and capital costs due to a projected tier one shortage of the CAP. Increases in reclaimed water delivery costs from Tucson Water, and that was that 1 year true-up cost, if you will, or adjustment from Tucson Water. So just some solution sets, you know, reduce expenses, borrow for capital, refinance debt, raise rates, or a combination of all these solutions. So I have scenario A in there. I thought I had gotten rid of it, but ignore that because we did have a scenario A that did address these issues, and it did have us refinancing debt, increasing the base rate for potable, and decreasing the reclaimed commodity rate. And that what we did is, I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want it to get confusing, but we found an item in the reclaim that we needed to reallocate from a commodity to GPF, and we did that. Next slide, please. So the GPF fund, this is, you know, the GPF fund, it's paying for the existing customers portion of the NWRRDS, and construction activities will deplete this fund in 22-23. Here again, what are the solution sets? You know, reducing expenses, finance GPF funded capital in 22-23, refinance debt, raise GPF fee, or a combination of all those solutions. Next slide, please. So let's go, Christian, can you go back three slides? I think this might be the best one for discussion purposes. So any discussion with respect to what was presented? Let me just give it this caveat is, at this time, I'm not presenting the solution sets. We don't have any recommended solution sets. During the finance subcommittee, we had a scenario A. We had some great discussion. The commission had asked us had steered us to look in a different direction on a couple items, the great recommendations, and we've done that. So I would expect at our next commission meeting that we have that we'll be presenting the commission with what those solution sets are and maybe what the preferred solution set is. With that in mind, any discussion on what was presented?
I'd like to just make the point, just so everybody understands it, that in the pro forma, there's no revenue, no funds included from a bond issue to fund the NWRRDS. That obviously will have to be a key element of the solution, and it changes the bottom lines considerably on these, mostly by just spreading the costs out through debt service. But I want to be sure everybody understands, even though we've been talking about bond funding for NWRRDS from the outset of that project, this is not in the pro forma. This is just looking at what happens if you don't do that.
Commissioner Mielke, great comment. And that Juan, I wanted to talk about one other thing here. If you look at the last two line items above total ending cash balance, the GPF and the impact fee fund. So the impact fee fund, that's for future customers, and it's this project is 60% financed by future customers, and that's the impact fee fund, and 40% financed by GPF or existing customers. If you look at the impact fee fund, we're projecting to have, we're projecting to be able to cash fund this whole project from a growth related perspective. If you follow that line item there, nowhere do we dip into the negative. That's awesome. Now the GPF does drop, and just to give the commission a little teaser preview of what's to come, it appears as if Marion, correct me if I'm wrong, if we do a $7 million bond issue for existing customers, the GPF is kept whole. Am I correct on that, Mary?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Uh-huh. So just want to offer that perspective.
Go ahead.
I just have one question. I wanted to go back to slide 9. I saw a reference. It's on the on the collection, I believe on the revenue side, but there is the NW reliability restricted cash. I just wondered what that was.
Great question. Commissioner Merrick, you came to the party a couple years late. So what it was is we're going back 10 years now. This CAP, Southern Arizona, we had an issue with CAP reliability. So for 1 month out of the year, the CAP canal is taken out of service. And, you know, our Central Arizona water partners, you know, they have all these reservoirs and all these sorts of things. And we were concerned about it was CAP reliability. You take it down for a month, but we still have access to water. And actually, this probably goes back 20 or more years, actually, now that I think about it. Well, you know, we were doing aquifer storage. Anyway, CAP had set aside some money for Southern Arizona, and it was called CAP reliability money. And it's basically so when the canal's down for that 1 month a year or even unplanned outages, how can we have a reliable source of CAP water? And what it meant for the town was we got CAP wrote us a check for $924,000. And CAP agreed that the NWRRDS project met the intent of CAP's reliability definition. So because we're storing water in Avra Valley and NWRRDS gives us access to that stored water, it met the requirements of reliability for CAP. So they approved us spending that $924,000 on this project. And I think Metro Water similarly got $924,000. And I think Marana got a little bit. It was less. So anyways, great question. Thanks for bringing it up. So we're showing that by the end of next year, we've spent all of that reliability money. Great question. Hopefully my answer made sense.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much.
I have a quick question. So just to clarify my understanding, so is the financial analysis we're doing now for next year, is that the first time we've ever had to consider a possible Tier 1 shortage?
Yes. We had been asked, Dean, and not just Oro Valley, but all water professionals in Arizona had been asking CAP, you know, what does our future look like financially? And this was the first year that we got some good advisory numbers. And here again, you know, Mary and I met with our water professional colleagues, and we're all projecting for the same thing, a Tier 1 shortage in 2023. So what we're going to do is we're going to aim for that. But if we have really good hydrology, in the upper basin states, that tier one shortage could get pushed off into 24, 25. And if that happens, what we're going to do is we're just going to adjust, you know, our trajectory downward to intersect with that. But right now, we're setting our trajectory for a tier one shortage in fiscal year 23. Now, bear in mind, when I say shortage, that's, we still get our full allocation because we have a higher priority position in the CAP system. It's a tier one shortage, and it is a shortage in the CAP system, but it affects, basically it affects agriculture. It doesn't affect municipal or industrial users. Thank you.
So financial.
It's strictly financial for our, from our perspective.
Any other comments, questions? Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. And we're going to be building on this in the meetings to come. So this was the groundwork.
All right, we'll move on to an update and discussion on the Partnered Northwest Recharge Recovery and Delivery System project. Peter.
Thank you, Chair McMillan. So as I was thinking about originally, I was thinking this update would be on the whole, the system, the partnered and the independent portion. But there's a lot of exciting things happening on the independent portion right now that I want to see if we bear the fruit we think it's going to bear. So I'll probably have ask Lee to report on the independent portion at our next meeting. So this meeting, I'm just reporting on the partnered portion. And another thing is, you know, for our new commissioners, I'm not going to go into the history of NWRRDS. This is literally like almost two decades worth of work just to get to this point. Just so the new commissioners know that we did cost comparisons on what would it cost to do something like this on our own? What would it cost to wheel additional water to the Tucson water system. And what we came back with was entering into this partnership was the best value to get 4,000 acre feet into our service area. So it just didn't like pop out of the air. I mean, there was a lot of thought, a lot of discussion that went into getting to this point. I'm excited on this presentation because we're actually coming out of the ground with projects. You know, there's been a lot of planning, a lot of designing, and when I've been giving updates, it's just things are in design. This update's going to actually be something tangible, and that's what we're going to discuss tonight. So next slide, please. So just a little background for some of our new commissioners. In April 2017, the governing bodies, Metro Water, Town of Marana, Town of Oro Valley, we unanimously approved a 50-year IGA. That's a big deal in and of itself. 50, typically IGAs aren't, I mean, maybe they're 10 years. This is a 50-year IGA. When we were putting this IGA together, we were looking for other models to follow, and we couldn't find one. So it's a very unique IGA, and I'm going to explain what some of that uniqueness is. So what does the IGA give of the partners? It's a capacity entitlement. So Oro Valley and Metro Water, we have an entitlement of 4,000 acre feet per year with this system. And Marana has an entitlement capacity of 2,400 acre feet a year. The IGA details the partnership, the design, the construction, the O&M of the NWRRDS system. What's interesting is, you know, we realized early on when we were working on this IGA, we could not identify like every challenge that was going to come along and how we were going to handle it and who was responsible for what. So what the IGA established was an NWRRDS committee, and it was to render decisions on design, construction, operations, deliveries, et cetera. And the IGA identifies who those representatives are, and it's Metro Water's general manager, Marana's water department director, and Oro Valley's water department director. And already we've exercised just the, we've seen through exercise and application just how important this committee is. Things have come up that we just couldn't even imagine would come up in terms of, you know, rights of way and easements and land acquisitions. And we've had to sit together as a committee when, you know, we have different, you know, different priorities. You know, I'm team Oro Valley, you know, Scott's going to be team Marana, and Joe's going to be team Metro Water. And we've had to wrestle with some things and come to an agreement with all the partners, and it's worked. I was telling Chair McMillan, I can always tell when we have come to a good agreement because none of us are happy. So it's kind of my little litmus test on that. One of the things we realized also is there was a lot of technical components to the work that we needed to bring folks in. So what we did is we established an NWRRDS technical committee, and this is where we bring in our respective departments, you know, operations, maintenance, and engineering staff. So Lee heads up that technical committee, and he brings in the different disciplines and O&M staff as needed to talk about certain design and operational perspectives. Next slide, please. So here's just an overview. I need to update this because some of the alignment has changed, but the general idea is the same. So the NWRRDS as a whole, it's a partnered portion and independent portion. The partner portion is identified in the green, and where it says Lower Santa Cruz Recharge Basin, that's where we store. Yeah, there we go. Can you go down and show them the recharge basins themselves, the little aerial? There we go, right there. Those are recharge basins where Oro Valley, we store about 4,000 acre feet a year. Metro Water stores water in the Avra Valley recharge basin. And actually they purchased that and own it. So we're recovering water within these recharge areas. The way the rules are written is we have to have our recovery wells within 1 mile of where we recharge. And then we're going to recover that water through three recovery wells, and it's going to roughly follow the green alignment to a partnered four-bay, thank you, Christian, to a partnered four-bay reservoir and booster station. From there, the partnership ends. We all have our own booster station at the site. And the booster station, they're similar in design but different in specifics because we all have different elevations that we're pumping to. So the independent portion is the red line. Oro Valley is roughly following a Lambert Lane alignment. And Lee will be presenting on this at our next meeting, and he can go into details on it. But the independent portion is what gets us into our service area. And there's some lots of challenges here. You know, we have to cross the Santa Cruz River, I-10, the railroad, and I think I discussed that in the next slide. So next slide, please. So update. So the NWRRDS partner project consists of recovery well design and construction. That's now 100% complete. What's next is well equipping, power line extensions, easements, and rights of way. We're about 30% complete on that. Also transmission pipeline design and construction. We're at a 60% design on that. Here again, it consists of easements, right-of-way crossings at the Santa Cruz River, I-10, the Southern Pacific Railroad, lots of partnerships that have to be entered in there for this transmission pipeline. We're about 30% complete with that. And the four-bay reservoir design and construction, we're about 30% complete with that, and there's easements and rights of way associated with that. So the little aerial image on the bottom there shows we've moved some of those wells a little bit, but in general, we have three recovery wells, and they're within the 1 mile, I think they call it a safe harbor, of where you're recharging. So and we have quite a water mound there. That water mound goes all the way to, I think that's Avra Valley Road in the bottom there. So we have quite a water mound, a lot of water stored there. Next slide, please. So I wanted to show the commission what we've been spending our money on besides, you know, 60% designs and design reports and all that kind of stuff. Like right now we're actually doing something. One of the things is when you drill a well for municipal use, there's a lot of permitting. There's a lot of steps that you have to go through to do this work. I'm going to be basically focusing on the actual work itself, you know, the drilling, the construction of a well and the development of a well and well completion. But I just kind of wanted to give the commission a scope of, you know, all the steps that are part of constructing a well for municipal use. Next slide, please. So here we're showing the drill rig as it arrives on site. It's a, you know, this was Yellow Jacket was the driller. This was a brand new rig. It was great to see. I mean, everything was new and fresh. And they set up where we're permitted to have our well. And the drilling operations begins. Next slide, please. So here, just kind of want to show, you know, it's quite a process drilling a well. And if you look at the schematic in the middle there, what you're doing is, you know, you first drill the drill hole with a pilot bit, and what you do is, you know, this well is 1,000 feet deep, and you don't want it to cave in on you, so they'll mix. You know, it's basically mud, but think of it as kind of a, and Lee can jump in here if I say it wrong, or you can embarrass me later in the privacy of my office, but it's a drilling mud. And what they do is as you're drilling, the hole is filled with this drilling mud. So you never look down and see just a hole all the way down. It's filled with mud. And the idea is to support those, that well formation, you know, so it doesn't collapse in on itself. Let's see, you look at the schematic here, so you have the mud pit, and you circulate that. That mud's also used as part of the drilling process. It cools the bit, it moves material out of the hole, and you start drilling with the pilot bit. And you'll see there's these things called collars. The collars, it adds weight to the bit. It helps drill a straight and true hole. And after you drill with your pilot bit, which is indicated on the left there, then you go through with a reaming bit. So you have a pilot bit, and then you have a reaming bit after it, and that's where you open up the hole to the size you want to have. Next slide, please. So here again, just showing the mud pit. Drilling a well is a very it's a very messy process. Lots of mud and it's noisy. But just showing you here kind of what the mud pit looks like. Next slide, please. So then, once we drill the hole, now we need to, you know, construct the well. And what we did on this well, and we do it now with our town-owned wells, is we use a stainless steel well casing. We no longer use, you know, carbon steel. We're expecting to, you know, get double the life out of a well using the stainless steel. Is it more expensive? Yeah, it's significantly more expensive, but drilling wells isn't cheap to begin with, so we're using the latest materials, the latest technologies. And what we're showing here is, you know, as you install the well casing, so that the screen and casing is lowered into the borehole. And what we do is we put in another line, we call it a tremi line. And what that is you use a gravel, or in this case, we use glass beads. And that is, those beads go between the formation and the well casing. And that does a lot of things for you. It can act as a filter. It can help you draw water more homogeneously through the formation, so you don't have just one area of the formation giving you all your water. It does a lot of things to help be a good well producer. And what happens is, as you're doing this, you're swabbing. What you're doing is, here you have the rig is it's like a plunger in the well. So you're trimming gravel or glass beads between the annular space between the well casing and the formation. You're putting energy into the well, and you're really just trying to get consolidation of that gravel pack or bead pack between the natural formation and your well casing. And then as you go on up, you lift that tremie up as you go. And what happens is, then you can see where on the left-hand side there's a bentonite seal. You get to a point where you seal the gravel pack or the bead pack with a bentonite layer, and then you put a cement grout. And that's really to protect any kind of infiltration from getting into that highly transmissive annular space. Next slide, please. So here, the well rig, the drilling rig comes off, and you come in with another rig, and it's just to do well development. Here you start putting energy into the well casing, and you're swabbing, and we just call it well development. You're just trying to, maybe if you have any cutting fluids that are left over in the formation, you're trying to just generate some energy to pull that out, and you're pumping water while you're doing this. And when you first start doing it, it typically comes out, looks like chocolate milk. By the time you're done, you're hoping it's clear. Well, good news is, on all three wells we drilled, the transmiss, these are very high production wells. They're permitted, I think, for a little over 3,000 gallons a minute. And there's something we call specific capacity. It's how many gallons do you get out of the well per foot of drawdown? And, typically a good well is like, maybe you can get 10 or 15 gallons per foot of drawdown. These were close to 90 gallons per foot per drawdown. I mean, that soil is very highly transmissive, great for water production. In fact, they knew they had a good formation and high transmissivity soil is when they were putting the mud in to stabilize the well. They had to thicken the mud because it was going into the formation and draining out of the well. So they had to really thicken it up just to get it to stay in the borehole. And that's usually a good indicator that, yeah, you have some great, highly transmissive soils. Next slide, please. So then after you do that, what you do is you've drilled your well, you've constructed your well, and you've developed your well, and now you're going to pump test your well. So what they do is they install a pumping unit, and that's what they're doing on the left. It's a line shaft driven vertical turbine pump. So what that means is, you can see at the end, there's a cone strainer there. And this one has 1, 2, 3, 4, has five stages. It's a five-stage vertical turbine pump. And it has a shaft, that like a drive shaft, operates that pump. They equip it with a pump. And then the middle picture here, you see there's a right angle gear drive there. Christian, can you circle the discharge head to your left, right to your right? Keep going left, right there. Okay, left, down, right there. That's your discharge head. So the water comes up out of the well, makes a 90-degree turn, and that's called a discharge head. On top of that discharge head is a right-angle gear drive, and it's powered by a diesel engine. And to your right, the pump testing begins. That green cylindrical thing is a flow meter. And what happens is, While you're pump testing, we do lots of pump testing. We'll do a step test, which is at certain intervals, you start pumping more and more water. And then we do a 24-hour constant yield test. We collect a lot of data. We sound, what we call sounding the well, where we monitor what the pumping water level is. We monitor the capacity. They'll shut off the pump and see what the recovery is on a well, really trying to understand the characteristics of the well, learning to really getting to see, learn its nature. This was very successful. All three wells, constructed with the newest equipment, the best equipment, utilizing the latest technology, utilizing the best materials. And we're partners in this. You're looking at, this isn't someone else's stuff. This is, 38% of this is Oro Valley's assets. Next slide, please. So, like a lot of our infrastructure work, I mean, big machines come in, lots of noise, lots of activity. I mean, a lot of assets go in, and manpower and brain power goes into drilling, constructing, developing, and testing. And when you're all done, you end up with this little 20-inch casing sticking 6 inches out of the ground with a metal cap on it. And there's $1 million right there. This well, I mean, this because of the construction methods and materials we use, if it's properly operated and maintained, it's a 50 to 100 year well. It really should be. It should last the life of the IGA. Any questions? Next slide, please. So to the important stuff, what I did here is, so the financials, so expenses to date, partnered is, a little over $2 million and just under $650,000 for the independent. And what I'm showing with the table here is, these are pretty close to actuals as far as the past goes. I took budget, and as we got numbers, I made them actuals just because I'm trying to do a running total of what the project's going to cost. And then we have our present. These are present budgeted numbers, and then future budgeted numbers. With respect to the partnered portion, I'm not expecting a lot of fluctuation just because any kind of cost savings we see or cost increases we see, we see 38% of it. So I'm not expecting any big swings on this. Now there's still some unknowns. We have to bore and jack under I-10 and the railroad. We think we have a good grip of what those expenses are, but there could be surprises. So, but we're keeping our finger on the pulse of this. We meet, at least every other month, and go over, meet with our, we have a consultant, several consultants working with us on this project. So let's see, what are we looking at here? So we're slated on the partnered portion to spend under $2.5 million this year. With the well equipping work we've done, I'm expecting that we'll be close to that. In the next two fiscal years, especially in year 22-23, we're seeing some big expenditures there because that's when we're constructing our transmission pipeline from Avra Valley to the partnered reservoir and booster station. I'm not going to steal Lee's future thunder with respect to the independent, but so there it is. By the time we're all done, we're looking at a $35 million project. And what's impressive is if we can build this and we're cash funding all but $7 million of it, that's a big deal for our community. So any questions with respect to the NWRRDS partnered project update? So
I have a couple.
Yes.
Just real quick. So did I hear you right? Did you say that the well we're putting in is 1,000 foot deep?
Yes.
So do we anticipate that our recharge is going to go down that deep?
You know what? Hey, Lee, did I misspeak on that, or was it 600 feet deep? Do you remember?
So, no, you're correct, Peter. It's 1,000 feet.
Okay, 1,000 feet.
Yeah, so, yeah, you're correct.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll give you your $20 later.
Yeah, you're always correct.
You get a raise. Commissioner McMillan, what was your question with respect to the depth?
I was just curious if our recharge is projected to go down that deep, or is that going to be primarily groundwater, existing groundwater?
So here we get, we did water quality sampling, and we did it at different depths. We haven't gotten the results back yet, but once we get those results back, we'll be able to tell by the fingerprint of the hardness and TDS just how far down it's going. I don't know the answer to that question yet. From my experience in the past with recharge and recovery, you tend to mound up on the top, you know, and we'll typically set, now we're not going to set our pump at 1,000 feet. You know, we will, you know, if the static water level's 250 feet in this area because of all the recharge, you know, we might set it at 400 feet, but we do want to encourage as much mixing of that CAP water with the in situ groundwater to reduce our TDS and hardness. But I'll report back to the commission once we get those water quality results. So I can't say absolutely at this time.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious. I know Tucson Water watches that very carefully as far as a signature on cap water versus groundwater. I guess the only other question I had was, so to date on the project, are we pretty much closely tracking budget and in time frame that we projected?
Yeah, we have been. So the only thing that really changed for us was this fiscal year, Marana asked us as partners if we could pump the brakes on when we did our distribution main construction, just because of their funding mechanisms and how they're financing it. So what we moved some things around so we could still be productive, but Christian, could you go back to the finance slide? Or do you have to bring it up again? Because if I show you this, it'll explain it better than my words. Okay, Christian, can you, on the partnered section under the column of 2223, there's a $8.99 million. Okay, that number was supposed to be in 21-22. But, you know, and this is being good partners, as Marana said, hey, you know, we got to do some things over here financially. We need some time to do it. I was okay for Oro Valley. It worked out well because it gave me another year to collect impact fee money, because we were close to looking like we might need to borrow for impact fee. But because of that, an additional year of collecting revenues, it looks like we can cash fund it. So it worked out well for us from a cash management perspective. So I was okay with it. So that was a change, is, you know, that we were slated to start spending the big bucks in 21-22, but to accommodate an important partner, well, they're all important, but to accommodate our Marana partner, we pushed it a year and we moved some other stuff up a year. Mainly the reservoir construction and some of that work. As far as costs go, I would say, yeah, everything has gone up 10 to 15% of what we first projected. I don't think that was due to an escalation in material costs or labor costs. I think it's just, when we started off with this project, there's just so many unknowns of a project of this scope. I mean, in, you know, in terms of just right of way and what easements do we need, and we're, and on all those sorts of things. But every, literally every meeting, the further along we get, we're finding those numbers. Nothing's happening that's scaring me yet. And I hope it doesn't. I feel good about the numbers we have, you know, what, and we just don't go alone at these numbers. I mean, we're working with Metro and Marana and looking at the project holistically and parsing out, okay, this part's mine, this part's Marana, this part's Metro's. So, and we meet regularly and go over these kinds of things. So the big change was we pushed some big spending back a year. And there have been some items that have cost more than we originally budgeted, but then some things were less too. So this, when I report, you know, on next year, maybe at this level, well, hopefully it's 34 million or less. But the important thing is, you know, it looks like we can cash fund the growth portion. And we're going to see if we can whittle down having to borrow for that existing customer's portion. We've come up with some solution sets that looks like we might be able to whittle that down, but we need to do some more discovery in that area.
Okay. Well, if you're not afraid, I'm not.
I'm still sleeping good. Lee, are you sleeping good?
Yes, I am.
All right.
I have a question.
We have a excuse me. We have a really good team, like Peter mentioned. Not only with our partners, you know, there's a lot of really a lot of technical expertise, you know, coming from Metro Water, from Marana, from Oro Valley, and to add to that, you have the consultants that we have on board with us that are, you know, these are, a lot of them are leaders in their field. So, I mean, you know, I feel very confident in the work that's being done and the partnership that we have. You know, we wouldn't be able, you know, to do it alone, you know, we wouldn't be able to have accomplished half of what we've accomplished so far.
Question, do you have a Gantt chart schedule for this? And if you do, maybe we could see it sometime.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I didn't provide anything like that on this presentation just because.
No, I understand. Don't take as critical about this presentation, but sometime in the future, might we see that? And the other question I would have is, what do you think the critical path is through this?
The critical path is probably still acquiring some of the easements we need to get across the railroad and I-10.
Okay, that could be the big schedule impact then, if anything delayed that.
And that's on the partnered portion. I think Lee, when he reports on the independent portion, we've recently received a lot of good news there for us. But I think on the partnered portion, you know, I-10, the railroad, there's still some work to be done there. I would say that's definitely critical path.
Can't put any water in the independent portion until the partner portion is finished.
Yep.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Peter. That was very informative.
Thank you.
Our next agenda item is something that we typically do with our utility commission, that is to consider the possible cancellation of our December meeting. I don't know about you guys, but I already have several extended family members that are already decorating their homes for Christmas. given 2020 has been a bit challenging. I think people are ready to have a holiday early this year. But anyway, we normally take this on as an agenda item to give the commission and water utilities staff a little bit of more time, a little more break. So do we have any comments or questions, discussions on the possible cancellation of our December Water Utility Commission?
Do we have any issues that are anticipated to come up in that time frame?
The only work I think we need to do is I would expect us to schedule another finance subcommittee in November, and maybe we need another one in December, but I think that body of work can very well be shared with the commission in January.
I would agree.
Other than that, I'm not anticipating, you know, we have a new council that's coming up to speed on a lot of, you know, annexation and golf courses. So I'm not expecting any demands coming the water utility way anytime soon. Now that I said that, I just jinxed myself, probably.
Well, with that on the record, let me move things ahead by introducing the motion to skip the December meeting and convene again in January.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay.
Second.
Excuse me? So we have a motion from Commissioner Mielke to cancel our December meeting. We have a second from Commissioner Hertz. And any other discussion? Okay, let's take a roll call vote on.
Commissioner Hertz?
Yes.
Commissioner Merritt?
Yes.
Commissioner Mielke?
Yes.
Vice Chair Reynolds?
Yes.
Chair McMillan?
Yes.
Thank you.
So December is canceled. We'll meet again in January. Okay, do we have any comments from council liaison? Peter, I think you're talking, but I think you're muted.
My wife would love to be able to say that. You know, we haven't been assigned a new council liaison at this time. Maybe we might expect that at our next council meeting. I haven't heard anything. And with respect to council activities, you know, as you know, Councilmember Pena, her term's up. Councilmembers Mo Green and Councilmember Tim Bowen, they were sworn in November 4th. The hot topics are this westward look annexation. Also, with respect to the Vistoso Golf Course. Mary, can you speak to that? A group made an offer to the owner, and they turned it down. Was that? Can you speak to that? Just to update the commission. What group? You're muted. What group provided an offer to the owner? Do you remember?
The conservation fund.
Charlie, you're an expert on all this.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Charlie, was it the conservation folks?
Yeah, it was. I don't know the exact name, but conservation group, or they basically what they do is they buy up space for the purposes of conserving that space.
Yeah.
I don't know much about them other than that.
Yeah, and the Vistoso owners, the rub for the community was they felt that was their offer was a fair market value offer, and the owners of the course turned that down. So the community's upset about that. So that's on the council's plate. You know, what do we do with Vistoso? and then proceeding with the westward look annexation. Those are the kind of two that come to mind. So it'll be a busy 2021.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Our next agenda item is subcommittee commissioner reports. Do we have a report from the finance subcommittee?
Yes, I'll just remark that we met once, reviewed the material that Peter presented earlier, and dug a little further into a possible scenario A that would address the revenue shortfalls that were demonstrated in the baseline. We also came up with some questions and a couple of alternative models, issues we'd like to see explored, all part of our charter to make sure that neither Peter nor Mary get bored going through this. So, but I think we started out on a pretty good foot. I'm not sure whether we'll finish it with one more meeting or it'll take two, but just a reassuring comment that a solution to all the problems Peter was discussing is within reach. It's obviously not unique. There are all kinds of ways you can, pardon the expression, skin this cat, and by changing different rates, you can achieve the same goals in revenue. And we're going to be exploring those, but I think for sure by January, we should have something settled in.
Do we have a finance subcommittee meeting scheduled coming up? Or
we will do one, but I don't think we have a date scheduled yet, do we?
Not yet.
Okay. Water resources and conservation. I talked to Peter briefly about this today, and I think we're going to start to step back into meeting again early next year and kind of restart our conversation on where we are with water conservation primarily after the utility collects more data. Any other comments, questions on that agenda item? Okay, so we're back to the director's report, and that's Peter.
Okay, thank you, Chair McMillan. Next slide, please. So on October 22nd, Councilmember Pena, Chair McMillan, and I, we interviewed to fill our Water Utility Commission vacancy with Winston's term expiring. We had two excellent candidates, and one was just a little more excellent, and we all unanimously agreed on who that was. I was asked not to mention the name right now because the clerk's office wasn't sure if all the council members were informed of that, but we found a member of the community that's in the water-ish industry and very excited and motivated to be part of this great commission. On October 27th, at our finance subcommittee meeting, Winston, Commissioner Tustison announced that was his last meeting. He had an opportunity for him and his wife to move in to a different home, and life was going to be very busy until the end of the year. So we bid him farewell and thanked him for his service and moving on. His term ends officially December 31st. On November 4th, Council members Mo Green and Tim Bowen were sworn in. They had their first council meeting. And Danielle, if I missed something here, jump in. November 5 through 10th, the commission should receive an email survey in lieu of the volunteer appreciation ceremony, and complete the survey and you'll be mailed a gift. Again, I'd like to thank this commission for another great year. I'm excited about the commissioners we have. I'm excited about the commissioners that are coming in. You've all been very steadfast in your mission and doing what's best for the community. No agenda other than you know, doing what's best for this community. It's been a pleasure working with all of you, and I look forward to that continued excellence in the future. December 2nd, 2020, Council is tentatively scheduled to appoint our new commissioner. Next page. So upcoming meetings, you know, November 18th and 2nd, Town Council regular session Zoom meetings at 6 p.m. We've canceled our December commission meeting, and staff thanks you for that consideration. It gives us a chance to recharge our batteries and develop work plans for the commission's future for calendar year 21. So thank you for that. And January 13th, we'll see you again at our next Water Utility Commission meeting at 5 p.m. And we'll get ready to look at our agenda and kick off a new year. And I think that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. I just wanted to remind everybody, and especially the new commissioners, that our January meeting typically includes agenda items for selection of the chair of the commission and the vice chair, and also subcommittee members for the two subcommittees for the next year. So be thinking about those things and put some thought into that for our January meeting. Okay, so we're back to call to audience. Do we have any audience speakers?
No, Mr. Chair, we don't have any audience speakers, and I didn't receive any blue cards.
Okay. All right, thank you. So we'll close that and ask if anyone has any future agenda items they would like to consider. Okay, seeing none, we'll move to adjournment. Do we have a motion on adjournment?
I'll move adjournment.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion from Commissioner Hurt to adjourn and a second from Commissioner Merrick. Let's have a roll call on that.
Commissioner Hurt?
Yes.
Commissioner Merrick?
Yes.
Commissioner Milkey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Reynolds?
Yes.
Chair McMillan?
Yes. Thank you, everyone, for attending our meeting.
Thank you. Have a safe and pleasant holiday season.